Hi, Bomb Squad. This is Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb and editor-in-chief of Cherry Bomb Magazine. Welcome to our new series, Follow the Leader. These days, everyone is hungry for more advice, especially about being an entrepreneur or finding smarter ways to run a business. For this series, we're talking to four women at different stages of their careers about how they handle key aspects of their business. Today, we'll be talking about culture. And no, we don't mean the yogurt kind. When it comes to building your business, it's important to consider how to create a community and an ethos that speaks to both your employees and your customers. That's why I'm talking with Diana Dao Huang of Black Seed Bagels about how she's worked to create a culture from day one, when she had just a few employees and one location, to today, with more than 100 employees across 7 locations. Let's thank Uber Eats for supporting this series. And now, my interview with Diana Dao Huang. So we're here to talk about culture, not the yogurt kind or the, you know, kombucha kind, all that, but what it means to have a company culture. So Black Seed's been open now for 5 years, right?
Yep. 5 years going on 6 very shortly.
5 going on 6. It feels like Black Seed has been around longer because you opened and you just started crushing it immediately. I mean, you changed the bagel scene in New York, which is not an easy thing to do because the places that have been around are institutions. And now Black Seed is an institution. How does that feel?
It's insane to think that we have 7 locations now in 5 years. Like you said, to you, it seems like we've been, to me, I feel like I've been doing it for a lifetime. It's
oh, I
insane.
Feel like it's been around forever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's the mark of a good brand. And a good product.
Absolutely.
When it sort of seamlessly fits into the city.
Yeah, for sure. Especially hearing, you know, the younger generations taught, you know, I'll be randomly on the L train and I'll overhear some, you know, college kid being like, oh, I take my mom all the time to Black Seed. I'm like, all the time? We've only been open for 5 years. You know, so it's
funny.
Amazing. Yeah.
So tell us how you got your start.
Yeah.
You've been baking for a while.
Yeah. Well, originally I was in advertising when I first moved to New York. And, you know, I did the typical life crisis, transitional change, drastic in salary pay and all types. But, you know, at first I started off in the savory scene.
Actually, okay, wait. I need to take you back to the advertising part. Yeah. You glossed over that very quickly.
I tried
to. where did you grow up?
I grew up in Florida. Uh-huh. My parents are originally from Thailand, first generation. And, you know, I went to school for marketing and business and then moved to New York thinking, you know, I'm going to be a madman and I'm going to be in advertising and that was going to be my career life choice. And
why was advertising interesting to you?
Obviously, the creative aspect, the money, because when you're young, you think money's the answer to everything. And, you know, at that time, too, it was, you know, 2004 and it seemed like that was the right move, especially, you know, growing in Florida. And when you think about New York jobs, you know, advertising, fashion, those are probably like the two biggest things that you first are drawn to.
The glamour jobs.
Yeah, the glamour jobs. And you realize it ain't so glamorous, is it? You know, it's like, especially when you're in the bottom of the rung. And I moved up pretty quickly in that world. And I learned a lot of business practices that I still apply to my current job. But you know, at the end of the day, I was stuck in luxury brands and, you know, every client that I worked on was just these unattainable brands that aren't for everyday people. And I just didn't feel good about it at the end of the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you decided I need to make a change?
I was probably, it feels so long now, 26, 25, okay. 26.
So you realized pretty quickly that this world wasn't for you.
Yeah. I mean, my dad's a Buddhist monk. My mom was a housekeeper. I never really, you know, grew up in that kind of world and, you know, consulted with my dad. And he was just like, you know, you have to follow your heart. You just really don't chase the money. I know how important it is in New York, but that's not going to be what makes you happy. And I really just dug into what makes me happy. And at the end of the day, you know, food is a big part of my family, of Thai culture. And so I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go to culinary school and give it a shot. And the main reason why I chose culinary school is I had served and bartended all through college, but I really was super nervous going into a situation where I really didn't know much about it except from the front of the house side. So, you know, I don't want to say I regret it now because culinary school gave me my basics, but, you know, I'm still paying for tuition, basically, you know, so.
Well, like every college student.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Not
yeah.
everyone, yeah. lucky ones, don't graduate with debt. But when you got to culinary school, mm-hmm. did you gravitate toward any one side, sweet, savory?
Yeah, I mainly actually went specifically for pastry because not even, I know this sounds crazy, not because I had a specific interest for it, because I knew that was my weakest thing. Growing up, Thai food isn't really known for its sweets. My mom was a big savory cook. She really didn't like bake a cake for us or anything. And so I naturally knew how to do a lot of savory things already. And I also wanted to really go into a kitchen and be like, you know what? I know how to do everything. I don't ever want to be in there like, I don't know how to butcher a pig. I don't know how to bake a cake. And since that was my weakest and I knew I was going to pay a lot of money for school, I was like, I'm going to do something that's going to benefit me, where when I go into a kitchen, the chef's going to be like, who knows how to make a cake? And I can raise my hand, you know? So that was really why I chose pastries. I mean, I still love making it, but overall, I like just being a well-rounded chef. I think it's really important in today's kitchen economics, you know, because you can no longer afford just a savory, just a pastry. You really need to know everything at this point.
So you gravitate toward baking.
Mm-hmm.
You wind up meeting the Mile End folks,
mm-hmm.
which is a sort of modern deli in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us how you got involved with them and how you got involved in their baking program.
Yeah, so it actually goes back to advertising. I had a really great friend that lived above Mile End. And at that time, it was, you know, just the one in Brooklyn, which now it's just the one in Brooklyn. But he was just like, hey, I know you're really nervous about going into a kitchen asking for a job. I know a place opening up and they really are needing like some good talented people. And I literally just went up and I was like, hey. And at this time too, Noah had no clue what he was doing either. Like I could just tell he was still green. So he's like, I could use any help possible. So at first I was doing half kitchen, half front of the house shifts because he needed to help them both. And slowly but surely he's like, wait a minute, I'm going to teach you how to slice meat. And he saw me just like murdering all the guys and I could slice way faster, way thinner than any of the guys even on the line. So he's like, all right, let's do this. So
that's awesome. Noah being the co-founder, right?
Yes,
of,
exactly.
Of Mile End. Uh-huh. So fast forward. Mm-hmm. So they come up with the idea for Black Seed.
Right.
How do you wind up involved in that?
Yeah. So it was actually Noah, the Matt Kliegman, who owns the Smile and, you know, operates the Jane. They both were just sitting around. This was after Sandy, basically, and they were just...
Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, Hurricane Sandy. And, you know, Matt offered a hand to Noah, just being like, hey, I heard your commissary went down. How can I help you? And, you know, they were just having beers and just chit-chatting about, you know, why are there no good bagels? And they were like, we're restaurateurs. We can make this happen. And
now we have to note, before, the New Yorkers are like, what do you mean there are no good bagels?
Right.
Noah's from Montreal.
Exactly.
So it's a different kind of bagel. Diana will explain to us what a Montreal bagel is. But that's why they were saying there are no good bagels.
Right. And then Matt is actually a New Yorker. So that's kind of how we came up with a hybrid. But, you know, and how they came about with me is like, you know, we don't know what Black Seed's going to be. We can't afford necessarily a general manager, a chef. We need somebody that can really encompass everything. And this was obviously before they made me a partner of any sort. And at that time, I think I worked with Noah for about 5 years at that time. And he was just like, hey. And two, at that time, I think I was just managing and doing like catering and events for him for Mile End. And he's like, hey, I know you really miss baking. Do you want to do this again? And I was just like, sure, I'll give it a shot, not knowing that was going to be the craziness it is now. So,
and it was one of those rare brands that became a success right out of the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. It was insane to me. We couldn't keep up with it. I would literally, you know, I first day, I think we had a close down at like 1 p.m.
I feel like I remember the Grub Street story. It's like kept running out of bagels.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So you're a partner today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talk about the Mile End days. I don't even think we used the word culture that often back then to describe
definitely not
what your company was like. In your mind, what does culture mean in that respect?
Oh, man, there's so much that goes into culture, right? I think, one, it can be just a feeling. It could just be literally walking into a space and feeling something. But also, what is your staff appreciating in the place? You know, that's part of it. But I think, honestly, I think the best description is just a feeling mm-hmm. to it, right? culture, I think, is, and it's, I'm still trying to figure out to this day, you know, constantly, how do we develop Black Seed culture? How do we really keep our employees, retain them, but also have them be excited to go to work? And not only be excited to go to work, be really proud of the work that we do. So
how would you define the Black Seed culture? It's probably obviously a good culture, I think, is sort of like a living thing. It's always evolving. Mm-hmm. But if you had to describe it right now, what would it be?
Yeah, I like to say we're extremely diverse. I think that's the thing I'm most proud of, to be honest with you. We literally have people from all walks of life, all ages. I always like to tell people that I am so proud that when you go into the Black Seed, nobody looks the same. You know, I hate going to those bars in Brooklyn where everybody has tattoos, a nose piercing, and, you know, there's a time and place for it. I get it. And it's not like that's how they hire. But it, to me, I just think it's really cool that we attract everybody from all countries, from all walks of life.
And that's not necessarily easy to do. Like, what are you putting out into the universe or in those Craigslist ads or wherever you're putting job postings? What are you doing to attract those kinds of potential employees?
So a couple things, you know. One, I really, really make an effort. You know, right now we're at 7 shops. I have 150 employees. So it's very intense, but I really literally give every single employee my personal phone number. And I almost try to make an effort to speak to each and every one of them. You know, and I really try to use my maternal instinct to really have them understand where a place that is growing, and we want them to be a part of the growth. And also, you know, a more personal approach. It's really easy with how large we are now to feel corporate, you know, and that's the last thing we're trying to do, is make people feel alienated, make people feel like, you know, I'm just punching in and punching out kind of thing. So I really make it a point to talk to each and every employee. I mean, obviously it's 150 employees, so it's hard to do every single day or every week. So I at least try to make a point every month to just sit down with them and just ask them how they're doing or what they're liking, or, you know, as easy as like, hey, what's your favorite sandwich? Something as small as that makes people feel really like, oh, wow, she actually knows my name. She's interested in what kind of sandwich I'm eating. You know, so it's just the small things, I think, that can help build culture.
And you're a partner today.
Yes.
That's exciting. Yeah. When did they make you partner?
It was like literally probably a year and a half after we opened. They immediately were like, we can't do this without you.
Like, we need Diana.
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of the Black Seed culture, how much of it are you writing down? As you get bigger and bigger and you have 150 employees, like, yes, a lot of it is stuff that comes from the gut and how you would like the business to be run.
That's funny that you're asking that right now, because literally now that we're kind of at a, I don't want to say stopping point, but we're at a little
inflection point, don't they call it that?
Right. Because literally, I think we opened up 3 locations within 3 months. I'm exhausted. Let's just say that. Literally, this is the time that I am starting to kind of write our training manuals out, write, you know, how I can really create this culture. Because I'm not going to lie, as I keep on having more and more stores, that is my biggest fear, is how do I incorporate more of myself in there? How do I keep, you know, my values alive in every single one of those stores? And I think the most important thing is really training my managers into being me. I don't want them to be mini-me's, but I do want them to have similar values, not necessarily in their personal life, but at least in their business life, you know, because again, I'm not the type of chef that yells. I'm very patient and I'm very encouraging. So I want to make sure that my managers are the same.
So how much is written down right now?
Probably none. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. No, that's okay.
It's hard to write something like that.
We're all figuring this out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's also hard to figure out how to really write culture down inwards. Because again, I feel like it's such a feeling and such a...
It's a spirit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
But once you start to get past 150 people...
Yeah, that's exactly the point that I'm trying to literally give myself computer time. Because as a chef, it's like, you know, people are like, oh, I can't believe you actually email me back. And I'm like, I really try to have some computer time, as cheesy as it sounds, because I need to figure out how to write this culture down in words. And it's probably the toughest task that I've had to do in a really long time.
And you haven't worked in a lot of professional kitchens.
Yeah, not that many. I mean, I think the most professional was the Boulevard in San Francisco. But even they didn't even have anything written down. It was very, you know, and I grew up in a kitchen culture that it was just like, all right, good luck in the kitchen. No manual. No, I don't think I've ever gotten a handbook. You know, we didn't have sexual harassment training. We didn't have any of this written down guidelines. It's just the old school kitchen way. So I think working with the next generation, the thing I am understanding is they need that really written down word because they are very, I don't want to say literal, but they, you know, they're just way more educated in social things than I ever was as a line cook, you know.
Does Black Seed have a human resources department yet?
You're looking at her.
Oh, how's that going?
It's good. It's good. I think it's good because it's extremely important to me as a female. Sexual harassment, any kind of harassment, not even just sexual harassment, is one of the most important things that I let any new employee know that I don't care how minute, how little it is. I need to know right away. You know, if they feel any kind of threat, they need to come to me right away. So again, it's kind of tough playing all roles, but I think if I was to have an HR department and I was separated from it, I would feel not in control, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have sexual harassment training yet?
Yes, we
do. You
do? Yeah.
Tell us what that involves.
Yeah, so Harry, actually, they do employment too. They actually have a great online program because there are so many nuances where, you know, as every employee comes in, I can't just literally sit down. So it's just an online program that's pretty, you know, it's a 45-minute course. And then at the end of it, they take a test just to show that, hey, they were actually listening. Because, again, I think the thing I'm learning is one person's harassment isn't necessarily the other's, but they just need to have the basic understanding of what is harassment.
Yeah. So you said it's Harry's, just for other restaurateurs who are looking for a resource.
There's a lot out there, but I think the good thing about Harry, so H-A-R-R-I, they give you a little certificate to each employee that completes it, so it shows that they've been through it. So,
and that you take it seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It also sounds like you're really describing a kitchen culture based on respect.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, 100%. As a female, you know, I worked at ISA, I worked at, again, Boulevard, which
so you've worked in a lot of kitchens.
Yeah, not a lot. I mean, there's definitely
For some reason, I thought you went right from culinary school to Mile End.
Yeah, I had a little break from Mile End for a minute because I, you know, wanted to broaden my experience. So, and it was tough being a female trying to really move up and move up quickly. So having that experience myself, I made it my goal that Black Seed wasn't going to be that type of environment. You know, it was really, really important to me and still is.
Let's thank Uber Eats for supporting Follow the Leader. Hey, Bomb Squad. Savvy food entrepreneurs are as selective about their ingredients as they are about food delivery, which is one of many reasons why they partner with Uber Eats. In addition to the reliable delivery, Uber Eats is a delivery platform that allows users to discover new restaurants, so a smaller business gets reach and awareness benefits. If you're ready to learn more and get started, visit ubereats.com/bombsquad for more information. That's ubereats.com/bombsquad. Let's return to my conversation with Diana Dao Huang of Black Seed Bagels. So let's talk about hiring. That is the hardest part, regardless of what industry you're in.
Yeah.
How do you hire?
Oh, man, I've actually stepped away from using Craigslist. The biggest thing with Craigslist is you just get everything. And, you know, you put specific things and you just don't get what you need. So I actually work with Hot Bread Kitchen.
For our listeners out there who don't know what Hot Bread Kitchen is, just give us the brief description.
Yeah, so obviously they're a bakery as well, but Hot Bread Kitchen also has this amazing training program for women that are either refugees or just, you know, lower income and just trying to get their foot in the door in the kitchen and might not have the skill sets. But I think the amazing thing about that, and the program for each person, they go through a whole series of interviews, and because I'm not quite sure how big each class is, but you know, they kind of have a limited seating and how many people, and I believe it's a 3-month program they go through. And I think the best thing about them is they don't just teach them, this is how you know, use a Roboku, this is how you dice something. They teach them the soft skills. So by soft skills, I mean, like, you know, showing up on work on time, how do you take criticism, what is really, you know, team playing. Because I think that the one thing that I have learned is that's what's actually missing in a lot of people. It's unbelievable how you know, I tell people, I'm like, okay, it's really important to me to show up on time. And to them, on time is, you know, 5 minutes past the time they're coming in, you know. And I love Hot Bread Kitchen for, you know, taking the time to teach really interview skills, skills that I definitely wasn't taught, you know, as a line cook. So I think, you know, that's why I love them. And they, at the end of every semester, they have a little recruitment program, and they really have, you know, and I also love, obviously, the fact that they work with women. I think it's amazing. So
Hot Bread Kitchen is a resource.
Right.
You're not using Craigslist anymore.
No.
Where else are you going?
Indeed. Indeed is actually
a
new.
You're the second person to mention that to me today.
They are a really good source. They really have figured out how to supply each employer with not just one or two, like literally hundreds of resumes you can sort through. So I really have enjoyed using them. Again, they might give you 100 employees, but out of that 100, you might get 10. But I think the frustrating part is you'd be surprised. You get 10 replies saying, yeah, I'll come in for an interview, and really only like two or three show up.
I know. Isn't that maddening? When I was hiring for my coffee shop, I would always be like, oh, they no-showed me.
Yep.
They
all
ghosted
the
me.
Time. They love ghosting.
They do love ghosting. But I learned over time, I was still using Craigslist because I'd used a few other sort of niche hiring sites, and they just didn't really perform for me as well as Craigslist, but I was hiring baristas.
Yeah.
And I learned that if I didn't write a really corporate sounding job description and ad, that I got a better quality candidate. And that sounds like it makes total sense. But if you go on Craigslist and you look at the ads, they're awful. They're like 1,000 words and so boring.
Yeah.
And instead, I just put like who we were and what we were all about. And at the time, you know, we were looking for baristas who were very much into environmentally sustainable practices,
right?
And got a lot of great people.
Yeah, I mean, I think our ad's kind of a mix. Like, obviously, we kind of, you know, tout the James Beard thing and tout that, you know, we've been in this, but we also
just
try
slip
to
slip that in. What's the James Beard thing?
You know, just being
so
nominated. I think we try to keep it a little bit corporate, but also, you know, really put our soul into it, you know, kind of just keep it fun and not so serious.
Yeah.
You know, I think also the hardest part is the fact that the economy is doing somewhat good. So it's kind of tough to hire somebody, you know, $15 an hour. Yes, that's minimum wage, but it's a lot for a restaurant, you know, and especially going from 13 to 15. It really is tough. If you think about now, a high school kid comes out of high school, makes 15. When I was a line cook, I think it was like $7.50 an hour. So I think it's definitely necessary. We had that jump, but it's tough from a business standpoint, you know.
Right. And you're selling like one bagel at a time. You're not selling
exactly.
Like a.
We're not like a wholesale. And even wholesale is tough because.
But I just mean even somebody who comes into a restaurant.
Oh,
and,
right.
You know,
right.
If the average ticket is like, I don't know, $70
exactly.
or something.
Exactly.
Your average ticket's.
Yeah, we're fast casual. Yeah. You know, we're fast casual and it's absolutely tough to compete with, you know, the Gramercy Taverns of the world that, again, every person that walks in there is spending at least $70, if not more, where ours, you know, it ranges from $3 to, you know, $12 and one bagel. Just that's why we kind of need to continue to expand. So,
yeah. So when you hire someone, what sort of orientation program do you have when they start?
Yeah. So luckily now with 7 stores, we have kind of hired, I guess you can call them like an orientation manager. So we are very compliant with all the paperwork. So literally the stack of paperwork they have to go through is like 100 pages long. So obviously that then they hand them like a menu guide and go through our basic guidelines of what it means to be at Black Seed, which obviously is the boring and basic part. And then we kind of just throw them in the trenches. You know, we have them side by side with the trainer. But, you know, I think the hardest part is really taking it back to when we just had one Black Seed. When we had one Black Seed, I literally, the whole entire staff were like my friends. They were like, hey, like, do you want to work with me? Which was kind of probably not the best thing now that I look at it. I definitely didn't hurt any friendships, but it definitely didn't gain any friendships like that. So it's definitely interesting on how to try to keep a little piece of me into every Black Seed we open. You know, that's been my biggest heartache, I think, you know, as we grow.
Yeah. And then how bad for your customers? I mean, what we're talking about is a lot of sort of the behind the scenes, although obviously some of the people you're hiring are consumer facing.
Yeah.
How do you create a culture for your clients and your consumers?
Yeah. I mean, I think one, obviously the aesthetics of your restaurant play a big role in it. Luckily, my two partners have amazing design aesthetic and they really focus on the build outs of that. So I think one, even though each location is a different floor plan, really things that are key to us are obviously, you know, the types of wood we use, what tiles we use, just really making sure that even though it might look a little different, you can walk in and you're like, aha, this is Blackseed 100%. The music, we use a program called Gravy. It's a little bit better than Spotify, just in terms of your employees aren't just allowed to pick anyone. It's literally Blackseed specific. You'd be some, when we were using Spotify, I'd walk in and I literally would hear death metal at like 7 a.m. I would have one baker wanting to put on this Norwegian death metal. And I'm like, yo, I know you're ending your shifts, but these people are just waking up. This is not Blackseed.
That's so funny. We worked, when I had Smith Canteen, the coffee shop, we worked with this great kid from the Food and Finance High School. Mm-hmm. I won't say him by name because he might be listening. If you're listening, you know I'm talking about you. But I would walk in and all of a sudden I would hear like a Lady Gaga song that I knew was not on the playlist. And then all of a sudden it would stop after one song. And I would be like, where is he? I know he messed with the playlist. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think kind of visual and audio cues can absolutely make the culture of a restaurant. The minute you walk in, you can feel a difference. And I think as cheesy as much as I hate uniforms, I think uniforms actually really help play a part in creating this feeling where, okay, these guys are professional. Where back in the day when we just had two or three, I was like, okay, yeah, you guys can wear whatever I want. Forgetting that some people's professional clothes aren't like every other people's professional clothes. So
tell us what they wear now.
Yeah, right now they just have basic Blackseed t-shirts. They just have our logo on them and Blackseed hats. Like I said, they're basic, but again, we're a bagel shop. I'm not expecting them to wear like chef uniforms and things like that.
Yeah. One of the things I talked to my staff about a little bit was how they interact with the guests, mm-hmm. because people use different pronouns today.
Absolutely.
You don't know what their pronoun of mm-hmm. choice is. You can't tell from looking at someone.
Absolutely, yeah.
Talking a little bit to them about just how you interact with
Absolutely,
guests and don't
yeah.
make assumptions about gender or
yeah, yeah.
pronouns so, or things like that.
A couple of things that we do is, so nowadays, a lot of credit cards can, you know, automatically read the name. So how, you know, one of the things we do once we're finished with a sandwich and order, we call out the person's name. So we no longer just go straight from the credit card, right? We always, always ask, hey, can I get your name? Because again, maybe I don't want to be called Diana. Maybe I want to be called Matt or Noah, you know. So in that respect, we absolutely just ask for their names. And I really try to... A lot of people still love to say, hey, honey, or hey, dear. And personally, myself, I hate when people do that to me. You know, even my friends, I'm like, can you just not call me that? I don't necessarily want them to be without personality, my staff, but I just let them know to really, you know, be neutral about things. Don't necessarily assume somebody wants to be called one thing or another.
Yeah, I had to talk to them about that.
Yeah, it's tough to kick that habit out of people, you know.
Especially when that's tied into how you feel you're being welcoming
yeah.
to someone.
Absolutely. And I think that's the one great thing about the sexual harassment training. It does touch on that where, you know, we can no longer assume and we shouldn't, mm-hmm. you know. I think it's perfectly fair to be called what you want to be called.
Yeah, it is hard to break that. I find I still say you guys too mm-hmm. much and I'm mm-hmm. really trying
yeah.
my best to break that.
Yeah, I'm the same, yeah. Yeah, especially I think just coming from a different kitchen status too, that I really try to respect people's gender identities in that respect. So,
I mean, you've been doing this long enough now. I mean, I know you're not an old timer in the industry, but you've really seen kitchens change.
Yeah. Oh my. Yeah. Even within this past 5 years that Blackseed's been open, it's so different. It's insane. Yeah.
It must be exciting to be part of that change.
Yeah. I mean, I hope, again, you know, the minute I opened Blackseed, I from day one, I made sure that, you know, we're not a yelling kitchen. We're not the type to make anybody feel excluded. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you come from. It's not the place for that. So I hope that when people leave Blackseed after working and go do something bigger and better, that they can always look at Blackseed and be like, wow, they were. And I absolutely have people still Instagramming message me and being like, hey, I'm actually a professor now in Philly. And I just wanted to say, I still think about how you never, you know, it never bothered you that I was transgender, or you actually were the first boss that made me feel like I was what I wanted to be. And I was like, yeah, why would I treat you any different? I don't understand why you're thanking me, but cool, thanks.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you've got 5 years of wisdom under your belt now.
Yep.
If you were opening Blackseed today and you were thinking about company culture, what would you do differently?
I'd probably write it down. No, seriously, I probably would, because as we're looking to expand outside, you know, which I can't necessarily talk about now, but
ooh.
As we're thinking about, you know, going to other countries and other, you
other
know,
countries.
Yep. Yep.
Damn.
Perhaps.
I won't start guessing what countries. Go ahead.
It's making me nervous again. How is Blackseed going to be translated to even other cities? Forget countries, but how would we look in LA? How would we look in DC? Because I'm not going to be able to be there every day like I am here. So, yeah, I like you said, I think just even starting to write down what it is. And again, maybe not hiring so many of my friends to begin with. But again, hiring my friends, I guess, helped me define that culture, because my friends are so much of me, you know.
So, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about food for a few minutes before we let you go. So explain to us what a Montreal bagel is.
Yeah. So one thing I want to say is that we're definitely a hybrid.
Right, that you're hybrid.
Yeah,
because
I don't want these Montrealers coming knocking at my door.
Tell us first what the Montreal bagel is, and then tell us what the Blackseed bagel
is. Yeah. So the Montreal bagel is kind of a smaller, denser, friendlier cousin of the New York bagel. It's sweeter because of the honey. It's wood-fired. And I always like to tell people on the spectrum of like a Kaiser roll to a pretzel. It's probably closer to a pretzel kind of thing. It's thinner, a bigger hole. Often misshapen. You know, people in New York are very spoiled with like perfectly shaped bagels that look like, you
big,
know,
pillowy bagels.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm a native New Yorker. So to me, a Montreal bagel is not really a bagel.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of people that I think Michael from Food Baby, he actually went to Montreal and he was like posting like, this bagel sucks. And, you know, some of the Montreal friends were like, nope.
No offense, Montreal. We love you.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I think we took the aspects that we liked out of Montreal, the wood fire, the honey, and not so much of a huge bagel, and mixed it with a New York bagel. It's literally like my two partners, you know, again, one's Montreal, one's from Long Island. So we just kind of mixed those two and came up with what I like to think is a perfect bagel. Not too big, you know, not as dense as a Montreal, but again, not as fluffy as a New York bagel.
Yeah, some New York bagels, you could actually sleep on one of them.
Oh,
they're
so
big and fluffy.
It takes me like days to get through one New York bagel.
When I was a kid, it was a big deal. My dad would go get bagels on like Saturday morning. Okay. And if when he came back, they were warm, just felt like you won the lottery.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, now I don't even touch cold bagels. I'm like, yeah, I'll just take one right out of the oven. No human hands have touched it.
And you are in our new issue. We're very excited.
Yeah, it's fun.
You kindly welcomed one of our contributors, Jane Larkworthy, who's a beauty editor and who works at The Cut, mm-hmm. New York Magazine. She is an amateur bagel maker. Mm-hmm. What do you call a bagel maker? A bagel maker.
So I'll have to think of an official term. A bagel baker?
I almost went like bagelist. I don't know why I said that. But anyway, she's an amateur bagel maker. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to learn a little bit more about how someone who's a professional makes bagels. Uh-huh. But now that I said that, I'm like, actually, we made her go do that story. We were like, Jane,
you forced her
do you want to go learn how to make bagels from someone who actually knows what they're doing? And she was game.
Have you had her bagels since she left there? Are they any better?
She's no. You know what?
I
had her bagel prior to her class with you. So,
yeah. Okay.
How did she do?
She did great, actually. I think, you know, after a couple hand rolls, like you could immediately tell which bagel was hers and which bagel were mine. But no, she really impressed me, actually. I was like, oh, maybe you should quit the beauty editing thing and start waking up at 4 a.m. with me.
And I love the description of the rolled bagel like a bangle.
Uh-huh.
Was that something you describe it as, or was that
no,
Jane's?
No, well,
terminology.
There's a bunch of different written history about the history of bagels, and there's one that we're saying that they mimicked it off of a bangle. So that's where, and you know, the N fell off, or however you want to describe it. There's that theory, and there's also the theory of that it was part of the king's horse's stirrup. So there was this famous Polish king that won this awesome war. So this Jewish baker made this, you know, pastry for this king that was mimicking his stirrup. That's one thing. And then once it was actually for the queen when she was giving birth, and it represented her bangle that she would always wear. So there's a bunch of things.
I was going to say something else about her giving birth and what it represented. I was like, where is this story
life.
Going?
It represents the circle of life.
Exactly. So if folks want to support you or just see what you're up to, where can they find Black Seed Bagels?
Oh, man. Now that we have 7 locations, it's hard for me to think. So I'm typically at either the East Village or the Chelsea location right now. The Chelsea Market's our newest one. It's more of an appetizing shop. So it's like our kind of newest.
What's an appetizing thing. Shop?
That's so funny. So it's not full of jalapeno poppers and potato poppers or whatever. It's, you know, an old school Jewish, I don't want to call it a fishery, but it's full of smoked fishes, basically anything that you could put on a bagel. So that's at the Chelsea Market. It's our newest one that opened maybe 2 months ago at this point. And then there's the East Village and Nolita, which is our original location. There's Brookfield Place, which is down by the Financial District. There's downtown Brooklyn. And then there's, gosh, I can't even keep track. One by the Ace Hotel near the New Milk Bar. And then there is...
You are all over.
Oh, Rock Center. I can't believe I forgot Rock Center.
Do you go to all of them?
Yes, I try to make it a point. Obviously, not every day. That'd be exhausting. But every week, I at least try to see them or meet up with all my managers.
That's a lot of...
It's intense,
that's high touch. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Again, that's part of building that culture. If you don't have FaceTime, you know, you're going to end up kind of disappearing if you don't make that FaceTime, so...
And tell me what your classic order is at Black Seed.
I always go for the super classic smoked salmon, cream cheese, tomatoes, capers, onions on a sesame bagel.
Why?
Just the balance of it, that saltiness from the capers and the salmon and then the mellowness of the plain cream cheese. And I just love a sesame bagel because it's, you know, as much as I do appreciate the everything bagel, I just think sometimes the garlic and onion can overpower all the rest of the ingredient. So, and I just, you know, the tomato and it just gives that acidity. It's just, to me, it's the perfect sandwich. So.
That sounds like heaven.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode of Follow the Leader. Thank you to Diana Daohuang for talking with me about the culture she and her crew have built at Black Seed Bagels. And thank you to Uber Eats for supporting this Radio Cherry Bomb miniseries. Follow the Leader was produced and edited by Jess Seidman of Cherry Bomb and recorded at CDM Sound Studios and Argo Studios in New York City. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.